Hi, everybody. My name is James. I'm an addict. My clean date is 9/26/99. So who's doing the counting? That was 26 years yesterday that I got it, which I'm very, very grateful for. And so is a lot of other people. I'm grateful for that. Grateful to Narcotics Anonymous and to recovery. I'm trying to tie thinking about this, the PTSD and stuff, and I'm going to start off with how I knew something's always been up with me. I think this started when I was in elementary school. It started with my father. My father wasn't necessarily like punching in the face kind of violent, but he was very, when I was very, very little, we're talking, I don't know, man, first, second grade, what I can remember, third grade, he'd say shit like, wait till your mom leaves. But I was a little brat. I got a twin brother too, by the way. Say this real quick, who did not see the world the way I saw the world. He did not see my father, fear my father, the way that I did. And I've learned that after getting in recovery, which is weird. He's an identical twin, DNA and all, but he's not an addict either. Go figure that shit out. The deal with my dad is, like, I can remember he would punch holes in walls. He raised his voice. He wasn't a fighter or anything like that. And we'd be coming home, we'd be walking home from school. I'm 58 years old, so in the 70s, from elementary school, and I would be thinking about what kind of mood is this guy going to be in, preparing myself for battle in second grade. And I mean the whole way from walking from school, which was at least a 30-minute walk, thinking, worried, afraid of what, is he going to be cool? Is he going to be punk? Because my mother was a nurse, so she wouldn't be there. Is he going to be punching holes in me? So I'm on edge, man. I'm constantly thinking about my six. I'm always thinking about, I'm like in second grade making plans to survive this encounter. And I'm way obsessive on it. And I guess I thought everybody else did that. But I've talked to my twin. He did not see it that way. And my dad would wait till we got too out of hand. Instead of nipping in the butt like I do with my son, who I've rarely seldom had to spank. He's grown up. As soon as that little weed pops up, he'd wait till he's so pissed off, he'd hit you with a belt buckle, whatever. And so what happened to me was the PTSD started setting in. I didn't know what the hell it was. And very shortly, and during this time in elementary school and all that kind of stuff, I started fighting, getting into fights, and I got very good at fighting and would fight two dudes, three dudes. I didn't care. And I've had my ass, I'm somewhere between Mrs. Wayne and John Wayne. I've had my ass handed to me plenty of times. And I started fighting. That was probably the first power. It's probably the first tool that I got. And I loved it. And it made me feel, I didn't feel protected. I don't know if that's, and I know the PTSD has a lot to do with that feeling unsafe and I don't know if it's because I'm an addict. I'm not 100% sure how all that ties together, but I know that I never felt safe. But when I started fighting, I felt safe. I felt like I was empowered. I played football. I would try to murder you on the foot. I mean, goddamn, how many concussions I've got. I mean, it was crazy, man. But I remember getting a reputation pretty fast. The bully, I mean, I would go after, there's one particular scene, and I'm not saying this to brag because I've had my butt handed to me, believe me. One of the guys in middle school was, and I'm sure he was doing stories back then too. Nobody wanted to mess with him, and he tried to come at me, bow up on me in front of the whole school after school let out at the end of seventh grade going into summer. And I just dropped my book, said, let's go, man, in front of the whole school. And dude wouldn't walk up on me, and I'm thinking, I was prepared for the butt kicking, and I'm thinking, what the heck was that all about? And found out years later that people thought I was crazy. I'm not proud of that. But for me, it was it's what I had to do. It was before the drugs happened, man. And it kept me from constantly being afraid and watching my six. And at 13, my father, we're getting ready to go to church, man. My dad, I'm yapping, I'm sure. My buddy, a friend of mine, who I'm still a buddy of mine, I grew up with, was there. And my dad took his belt off. I took it out of his hand and walked him into a wall and told him very quietly, in his ear, if you ever try to hit me or my brother again, you raise your voice at my mother, I'll kill you where you stand. And I guess he believed me because it changed him. Then years later, recovery, and we're talking 5 years ago, seeing a counselor over a lot of this stuff. He told me that God made him righteous through me, made him right at that point, stopped the violence and stopped all that kind of crap. But then here's the problem. He let a 13-year-old take over the house. It's on, you know, and that's about the time where the experimentation with drugs and stuff started happening for me. And, you know, 15 years old, I'll qualify myself real fast. Buddy down the street, still buddy of mine today. His dad was a dust off pilot from NOM, and he worked at the bar. And I remember Pete popping balloons at Jeff's wedding, hitting, going up underneath the porch, and me going after the dude. And that was my first visual sign of what PTSD was like for somebody who was in battle. And I remember feeling so bad for him. But anyway, we set up our first keg party. We got everybody coming. So the party started at 6:30. I went and picked up the keg because at 15 I could buy one out of Pasadena, Texas. They had a drive-thru you could go through. And showed up to the house. Me and Jeff planned the whole thing. The party started at about, we'll say, 6 o'clock. And we start playing quarters and just drinking like crazy. I don't know, man. I started drinking, and I drank like a dope fiend from hell. And so 6 o'clock it started. My girlfriend that just broke up with me was babysitting two streets over. And somehow about an hour and a half later, I'm sitting over there. I got beer bottles. I don't know, wearing pockets and everything. And I'm sitting across the street on the curb. And I remember her coming and looking out the door and going, "You get the hell out of here, James." Jamie's my nickname. They call me Jamie. And I grabbed a beer and I dropped it, broke it, grabbed another beer. I don't know where these come from. This is what I can remember. And I got up and went back to the party and got into a fight with Bub out in the front yard. Next thing you know, Sean shows up, my buddy, in a car, and I I start driving it. And I remember doing donuts around the light poles at Eckerd's, that's before they had Walgreens, and then getting sick, feeling sick, driving myself to my house, getting out. He takes off. HPD jumped on his butt right when he got out the neighborhood. So, and they saying I'm getting kicked. Boom, boom. And I look up and it's my twin. He's getting off work. He's working at the mall, Alameda Mall. I grew up off the south side of Houston. And I had urinated on myself. He got me up. So the party started at 6, right? This is like 9:30. He gets off at 9. He shows up at the house at 9:30. So about 3.5 hours. The girlfriend damn sure not coming back. And by the way, the car was stolen. So I'm driving a stolen car. I didn't even know. And I make it to my house. I pass out. I pee on myself. And there's some serious consequences right there. There's a glimpse in how my life's fixing to go. And the next day I woke up, I don't remember if I had a hangover, and I got with Jeff and we planned the coming up Friday's party. All those consequences did absolutely nothing to me. That's what what the drugs do to me, they do for me, is what makes me a drug addict. I cannot guarantee you once I start doing anything, including fist fighting, drug, whatever it is, what's fixing to happen. I can't guarantee you. So that's what makes me, pretty much that's my drug addict kind of lifestyle. Get in the fights and then the party's on. I'm trying to work. I'm trying to have a normal life. I've always had a job. I never used every day or none of those things. So hint, come full circle. Life's just really tough, man. And the last 3 years of my using were pretty rough. I used alone basically most times and was fixing to lose my job as an electrician, ended up getting in touch with Narcotics Anonymous and actually started in AA, which I have no issues with. My wife has 27 years next month and she calls me a pussy drug addict and she found her recovery in Alcoholics Anonymous. So get into recovery and I am a paranoid, watching my back constantly, just nut job, man. And I get into recovery and I start doing pretty good in recovery and took a couple years of me relapsing once or twice a year to finally surrender. And I got basically ended up in Narcotics Anonymous, met Max and finally surrendered this program. Went through 2 major depressions. My first year of life sucked. It was pretty bad, but I started following directions. I became willing. The book talks about doing whatever I needed to do to get and stay clean. And I've done that. And that's the reason I'm still clean today. And real quick, at 4 years clean, 2001, 9/11 happened. I just had a new wife, kid, home. I got like 2 years, 2.5 years clean. And my first thought was I'm going to go join up. And the next thought was like, crap, I can't. So 2003, I signed up for the academy, for the police academy. And I don't know why. I went into law enforcement. And a lot of people were surprised, man. My wife, for one, she's a convicted felon, which is not a big deal. It seems to be, but it's not. So she's kind of tripping. And got into law enforcement and excelled at it. Did very good. Did very good, actually, into the academy. We're pretty focused people. And went through some serious change in my life and really loved the training, man. I loved the camaraderie. I loved the training. I loved everything about it. And it was a brotherhood. It was pretty cool. And was on the streets for about 10 years and then ended up getting off out of it full-time and did part-time for 6.5 years. Started in 2004 when I was 36. I went in late. I got into the academy at 36. And you see stuff, man. I mean, you do stuff. You go through stuff. We put your fingerprints on the trunk every time you do a stop. So when they kill you, your boys will know it was them. They can find them and take care. Back then, you'd still take care of some business, but that's probably neither here nor there. And I didn't realize, man, all the just crazy stuff dealing with us most times, dealing with us. And I had a lot of empathy, man. I got to treat us with respect and help a lot of the officers understand. Nobody knew. I told no one that I was in recovery. That's not something we talked about. But I got to help a lot of them kind of give us a little bit of slack. And bumping through life, saw some horrific stuff, went through some horrific stuff. You know, the first time a dude got out of a vehicle on me, I just got off a year of training with a pistol. It's like, luckily I cleared leather before he did and charged on him. And he was military, ex-military, and MP too, man. It's like, what the hell? And the good news is, man, is the way I grew up, I'm not afraid to die. Do it, man, let's go. You know what I mean? And so I did not have to. I did not have to take him out, thank God. And that's when I found out. I do believe it took me 3 or 4 years to go, holy crap, he was trying to get me to take him out. And I didn't even realize it at the time. And I guess me charging him the way I did scared him enough to where he put it down, the pistol, and asked, you know, and things like that at the time didn't bother me one bit. We're going to go on to the next stop or the next call. It wasn't a big deal. But, you know, a lot of you guys know in here, man, what it's like to go look and be put into that situation to where you may have to do it or they may do you. Y'all know what that's like. And your training kicks in. I love training. I still love training. The training kicks in. There's no thought process. You do what you have to do. And then there's been other incidents for me that I'm not going to go into. But it was more the so I'm gonna get there, go quick. About, I don't know, man, 3 years ago, Camp Hope, or whenever Camp Hope started, I remember hearing about it, and my sponsor told me, you need to go there. What do you mean? I wasn't in the military. He goes, you have something in common. And, well, what the hell's that? Violence. Oh, fuck, I can get that, man. Okay, cool. So I head out, and I go to Camp Hope, and I ended up sponsoring this dude, Jonathan. He was on an aircraft carrier. He was on the deck. I don't remember what he told me he did. And I have 3 months, man. He split. But I'm talking to this dude. This is a couple of years ago. It's wintertime, and we're going through the steps, right? And he would sit there, and I'd go over there, and we'd be sitting down the house across from the manager's house. I remember sitting on the porch with him, and he would go, Jamie, you have PTSD. And I'm thinking, what are you talking about, dude? Look, we're doing – and he would – people walk by. Jamie's got – hey, man, he's got PTSD, and he'd start telling me this stuff. And all of a sudden, we're sitting there one day, and this incident came up with an 18-month-old baby. And it was the most – I can smell – the room, the child, the scene. And this is 13, 14 years, I don't know, 12 years ago. And I can still tell you everything about it. You remember the old, I don't know, some of y'all remember the old crank up, the rockers, you put the baby in, they're metal, you crank them up, and they like, and that's what the child was in when I got there. And it was a murder-suicide. And this fucking idiot going to prison. He's going to prison for molestation of a child. I don't know which one. But anyway, he did it. He did the whole thing and found the note. And I remember sitting in the room with her, waiting on the body snatchers to come in with her. And nobody came in. Nobody, I let one female paramedic come in. That's it. And she came in mostly to talk to me. And I stayed there for about a day. Well, it took, I don't know, about 7 hours. And you just pushed that stuff down. And he kept telling me this, and finally I sat on that porch and I told him this complete story. Broke down, but I was able to get it out. So to say that, talk about that. I could smell her. Y'all know what I'm talking about, these scenes. It's embedded in your soul, in your DNA. And we start talking about it, and then what came out of that for me was first of all, I was able to talk about it. I didn't know I had PTSD. In law enforcement, we don't talk about that stuff. They're starting to. You don't want to talk to psychiatrists because they're going to take you, going to put you behind a desk or something. And anyway, I tell him this story, and it's like I walked out of there. I left that day from Camp Hope thinking, I'm there to help y'all. Yes, we have violence in common. And then that pops, when I say pops is God, pops never puts two people together for one to get something out of it. It's always for both to get something out of it. And that's what I got out. I was like, holy shit. And then I started thinking about, I'm always checking my six, man. I could not be in any room in my own damn house. The doors are always locked. Don't leave that fucking garage open. Somebody come in behind us, that ain't gonna happen. And I'd have a .45 and usually some magazines on my person, or at least sitting next to me, got it stuffed in the cushions. And then I got guns laid out. You don't want to come in my house. Let's just put it that way. But I wasn't even, I didn't even realize, man, I couldn't even be in a room in my own damn house without a .45 and at least 30 rounds. I did not even understand. That was normal to me. You know what I mean? That was normal to me. I got to protect me. And that's not the case today. At nighttime, it's the case. But it's not the case today. And I didn't realize what the heck's going on, man. And I owe all that to recovery. I'm doing the 12th step. I go out to Camp Hope, and all of a sudden I find out I got some issues, man. And I got some issues I've had since I was a kid, but then fuck that. You throw in all the stuff that I've seen being on the streets for 10 years and dealing with us and dealing with this and the incident with the 18-month-old little girl. You know, that kind of stuff. And it messes you up to the point to where I didn't even know I was messed up. Let's just put it the way. I did not realize. And I know my wife, I tried to talk to her about my days, you know what I mean? And she didn't want to talk to me about my days. I had nobody to talk to. We didn't talk to each other about it, you know, especially back then. So you had recovery. So what happened was recovery kicks in. I'm doing the 11th step. I love the 11th step. It's my favorite step. I tell Russell all the time, if I could only do one step, it's going to be the 11th. And the reason is the connection to the higher power is so important. It talks about we're powerless. That is our dilemma. We have a spiritual disease. Spirituality is the only thing that's going to fix us with this disease, right? And so I had 23 years clean when I found out I had PTSD. I had 2.5 years clean when I signed up for the academy. And I went in, so I had 4 years clean when I hit the 5 years clean when I hit the streets, and went through all that and loved it. I mean, the training was, like I said, but then the 11th step has kept me connected to a higher power, and it's got me over to work in the 12th step at Camp Hope. And then I found out, fuck PTSD, and we know what it is. It's our reactions, the trauma, you know. It shows up in our relationships, our reactions, our sense of safety. That's the sense of safety is what's always been there for me. My whole life has been the sense of safety. And so then what happened to me when I was talking to Jonathan, I realized, fuck, I got somebody, I can talk to y'all. I can talk to you dudes about anything that has gone on in the past or is going on now. And then all of a sudden, recovery starts kicking in, man. The higher power starts kicking in. It gets me over there to Camp Hope. This happens. And I started getting some relief I didn't even know I needed. I thought it was there to help you, man. Get through these steps. We could stay clean. And that is the whole purpose behind Narcotics Anonymous, is to find a way to live without having to take drugs. And that stands today. But then all of a sudden, you keep doing this damn program, guys. You keep working this program in the steps, and you, in the 11th step, man, is one of the most, I mean, that's the connection. And look what happens, man. You start getting, over the years, you start seeing some trauma. My dad, right? The fighting, all those things, and getting in trouble, and then the freaking Wild Turkey, which I loved, and the drugs and all these things, and over a long period of time, these things start coming up so you can get healed from it. But it's not really healed for me. It's so I can be there for you. If I get healed and I see it, I can turn around and share that with you so you can get healed and you can go share that with somebody else. That is the whole purpose behind this program, is to meet a higher power and then to share that with other addicts. And neighbors, too. Don't get me wrong. Neighbors, too. But I appreciate and love every one of y'all and respect everything you've done for this country and what you've done. And I'm just so blown away how much we're all alike, man. You know what I mean? But, I mean, this is an additional thing to the addiction, is the PTSD. And it is so awesome. I'm going to say this. It is so amazing. This program, Pops, blows me away with this spirituality and this connection to this higher power that loves us, by the way, is crazy about us, bad taste in us. I'm sure he's got bad taste because he's crazy about us. But he wants nothing but to be there for us, which still blows my mind. And we get free, and we get to free each other. And I don't have to have a 45 or a shotgun in every place I'm at in my own damn house. And that's huge for me. That's important. And I owe it all to Narcotics Anonymous and to you guys. So that's my stand up. You know, I love you guys. I mean, I'm just so grateful, man, what this has done for me and what it'll continue to do for me. If I'm willing to work this program, I have to be willing to do the things that I don't yet agree with and the things I don't want to do. And when I can start doing the things I don't want to do and do the things I don't yet agree with, like what my sponsor tells me to do, it's good to go. You know what I mean? Once I can get to that point, that is the surrender we're looking for. And then we can get the recovery. So I'm going to let everyone, man, I love every one of you guys, man, we're here for y'all. And y'all are here for me. And that's very, very important. Because I'll tell you, in this situation, talking about the PTSD and stuff, before 4 years ago, I felt alienated in this program because of the stuff I just told you about. You know what I mean? I did. I felt different from a lot of the people. I knew about the drug addiction being an addict, but I felt different, and I did feel, it wasn't like it never made me not want to come here, but I did feel, and I'm standing up because it's important to me, I did feel separated in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous because of the shit I went through. I'm not talking about my dad. I'm talking about the stuff I saw on the streets and the mayhem and murder and gore and all that shit. And so I'm really grateful for Camp fucking Hope, man, and you military fuckers for fucking saving my ass, man. It's huge not to have to have a 45 in every room in my house. I know that sounds crazy to some of the people out there, but that was like, wow. I don't have to do that? And sometimes I don't even think about it. That's even better. So That's what I got, man. That's what I got on that. Thank you. I appreciate it. Next.
My name's Zach, and I'm an addict. I got to stand up. I got to be able to move around a little bit. I can't sit there. I've done way too many drugs in my life. Man, a lot of people think when they think about PTSD and all that stuff, they think military, first responders, all that stuff. But I had PTSD way before I ever joined the military. If you use drugs the way that I use drugs and you lived in some of the situations and went through some of the things that I'd went through, you know, before I ever joined the military, you know, watching my friend die from a car wreck, man, and some of the things that I'd been through way before I ever signed up, you know, to join the military. And it's funny because a lot of times people use drugs to deal with the trauma. And then the use of those drugs puts you through more trauma. So it's just like a cycle that we get ourselves into. But, you know, there is hope, man. And the answer for me and for what I've been through and in my life for recovery, PTSD, because all of it's intertwined, I think 95%. Of combat veterans with PTSD also have substance abuse issues, something like that. And so they're intertwined, man. But the answer is community. You know, the answer is recovery. The answer is being able to talk to somebody. And the way we talk about things is how we deal with it. And it changes the perspective. If I'm able to find somebody that's been through the things that I've been through and I can relate to that, and we can heal and recover through this process together, that's the answer to all this. So there is hope. And hope for me is in the program of Narcotics Anonymous. I went through Camp Hope, and that's how I ended up in Houston in 2017. Because I went through drug court in Kentucky and got my life together for a little while, and got the girl and the house and the kids and all that stuff. And then I burned it to the ground. And she literally took off to Texas to get away from me. And then I followed her with the promise, I'm going to rehab when I get there and everything's going to be different. And then she left me on the side of the road in Huntsville and took off and left because I was trying to get $20 worth of dope before we went back to Kentucky with her tail between her legs. And I walked, man, for days in the middle of Texas by myself. In Kentucky, people pick you up. In Texas, they will not. I walked, man, and I walked, and it sucked. And I ended up at this hotel, and I met this dude who was pimping out his old lady, and they let me stay in their room, and then we walked to Walmart because they had some food stamps, and just, you know, and I met this dude, man. We were trying to, we bought all these groceries and realized we had to carry them back like 2 miles. Yeah. So we're like walking around the Walmart parking lot looking for a ride, man. And I'm trying to find some like shady dude in an old Toyota Corolla or something. And I look up and this guy, man, is that I was with is talking to this dude in a brand new King Country, brand new truck. And when I walk up through there, you know, I get up closer to him. I see his Asbury College sticker, which is a college in Kentucky close to where I live. And then I see his Airborne sticker and his Army sticker and all the things. So I'm related to this guy immediately. And I get to talking to him, and he's like, you know, telling him I'm a combat veteran and everything. And he's like, you need to come to Camp Hope. He said, I'm a fucking pastor. And I was like, I didn't know if I liked that or not. You know what I mean? I couldn't figure it out. I'm like, that's kind of cool. But I went back, man, and I went back, and I was sitting in that hotel room the next morning. He gave me his number. He gave me a combat healing trauma manual. Combat trauma, healing, whatever. And I'm sitting there, and I'm smoking the last little piece of a blunt I had. And I'm looking, man, and there's like four or five of us in the floor, a couple in the bed or whatever, and I'm like, what am I doing? So I call this dude, and he comes and gets me, man. I go to Camp Hope, and that was my first introduction to Narcotics Anonymous. They took us out. We had guys came in, sponsored guys, you know, like that. We went out to a lot of meetings and stuff, man, and that's where I met a lot of people from here. And my first real introduction to Narcotics Anonymous. The funny thing is, when I was going through Camp Hope, the trauma that I realized that I had wasn't PTSD. It was abandonment issues because I never had a father. I'm a 35-year-old grown man crying because my dad didn't love me. Not because, you know, the things that I'd been through in combat and stuff. Because I've been through some things, man. And we all have. If you use drugs the way I use drugs, you've been through some stuff. You've seen some stuff. You know, I kneeled down one time to flip this guy over in a body bag, and all the brain juice had dripped out of his nose, and I had to wear it all day because I put my knee in it. Picked up little pieces of bodies and stuff. Man, the smell, like he was talking about, of somebody burnt into their car seat, you know, because a bomb had went off, and you're trying to pry them out, and the skeleton basically comes out of the skin, and all those things, man. And I've seen all those things, but, like, none of that was as devastating to me as what the disease of addiction. The compromise of my morals and my values, man, and losing everything that I have and losing myself, man, and being stuck in a bathroom for hours, overdosing, and then waking up and shooting the same dope that just killed me and sitting there for hours just trying to hit that one more shot, man. You know what I mean? That was the degradation and the pain that way surpassed any kind of trauma that I'd ever went through, but it's all interconnected, man. I will use drugs to avoid the trauma, but the trauma is caused by me using drugs. But there is hope. And the hope for me is in Narcotics Anonymous because I'm surrounded by people who understand, who have healed. See, I also get the opportunity to take everything I've ever been through and turn it into an asset, right? I take everything that I've ever been through and I use it as a way to connect with somebody else and say, hey, man, I understand where you've came from. I've been there too. Let me show you a way out. Let me show you that there is hope. Because a lot of times, man, newcomers come into the room and they think they're the only one. They don't realize it. Like, we're all messed up. We're all the same, man. We've all been through the same thing. Because the military will take you and does not care about your background. Does not matter where you came from, what you look like, none of that stuff. We're all here on one mission. Well, Narcotics Anonymous is the exact same thing. We're all here on one mission, man. And, you know, I love this program because my inability to keep a needle out of my arm for 25 years is now my greatest asset to carry a message of recovery. You know, and like, what kind of grace is that? That's awesome, man. You know what I mean? I'm able to turn the pain that I've been through and all those things, man, I'm able to turn that into a passion. I'm able to turn that into a purpose. And I'm able to help somebody with it, man. My wife, she lost her dad last year and her sister to the disease of addiction. And the other day she was talking to her friend. They both got clean around the same time and everything. And her friend just lost her mamaw and is getting ready to lose her dad. Mamaw not to the disease, but her dad definitely to the disease of addiction. And she said to me, she said, well, now I know why I went through what I went through. Because she's about to use that to help her, man. And that's the way these things work. You can either become a victim of what you've been through, or you can become an advocate. You can be a victim, or you can choose to fight and recover, man. It's a choice that we have. It's the way we look at the things that we've been through, man. It's the way we use it. You know, the greatest trauma I've ever been through, man, is also my greatest asset to help somebody. It just depends on how I'm willing to look at it, man, and I'm willing to talk about it, and I'm willing to hit this thing head on. Because my brain is hardwired to want to avoid anything difficult, right? My brain just wants to be numb, and it just wants to feel good. But the only way to get through the trauma and get through the pain and get through those things is to hit that stuff head on, man. I've got to fight my way through it, and that's where the steps come from. If you want to heal from trauma, work the steps. It's that simple. Because then you start to get into the basis, even before the trauma, even before the things, me figuring out that I have abandonment issues because I never had a dad growing up and all that stuff that led way before I ever put drugs in me. But it also allows me to look at the things that I've been through, man, and hit that stuff head on. Because you're either a victim or you're a fighter, man. It's that simple. And I've been able to connect with people. I've been able to use the pain and the things that I've been through, man, and connect with people and be able to sponsor people. And I have a heart for veterans, but I also have a heart for just anybody, man, in this recovery process because, you know, 22 combat veterans a day take their own lives. I think it's 300 a day overdose and die in America. It's a lot of people, man. It's a lot of people. But to see, you know, combat veterans or just, you know, recovering addicts, man, to see guys come in and they won't look you in the eye or whatever, and then in about 30 days, light comes on, man, and they start to come back to life. But that's what this thing's about, man. That's what the hope is for me in this program and in Narcotics Anonymous and the fact that I get to use all the pain, everything that I've been through, man, to help somebody is tremendous. I went from, so after Camp Hope, I did not stay clean. I did help start the Jekyll and Hyde meeting in Narcotics Anonymous over there, which has way more clean time than me and the guy that started it. But it was cool because like 2 months ago I was in Atlanta and I got to go to my buddy's home group and he and I helped start that meeting here. It was the Ebony and Ivory meeting in Narcotics Anonymous at first, and then they switched the name after I left. But man, I went home after Camp Hope and got way more pain and lost everything. I got the wife, or the woman back. I got the kids back, the house, you know, all the things. And then I burnt that to the ground. And again, you know, and ended up at the lowest point in my life that I've ever been, man. doing things that I thought I would never do. You know what I mean? Completely lost the kids. I walked out on a 3-year-old and a 4-year-old. Hadn't seen them in 2 years. My son, he's 16 now. At one time, man, because I'm stuck in this town, I have nowhere to go. And I walked to his mom's house, and I was trying to get her to let me spend the night. She wouldn't, man. And this little boy brings me a blanket and a cup of coffee out the back door, and I hide up in the woods, man, asleep in the woods that night. And that's the little man I'm supposed to be raising. I'm supposed to be the example of what a man is, you know, what a man looks like, how you're supposed to live, move, maneuver in this world. And he's still, you know, sneaking me out a blanket and a cup of coffee. But I spent most of 2020 in jail, man. Hadn't seen those kids. Hadn't done anything in my life, man, since the military that was worth doing. Because I went from leading men into combat, leading 50 to 70 truck convoys, being a lead navigator, man, all those things, being responsible for millions of dollars worth of equipment, plus the lives of an interpreter and the team that I led every mission. I went from that, man, to being beat into absolute submission, to where the best thing I could come up with is I'm going to go up here and sit in the woods and shoot dope until I die. And I just never died. I got lucky enough not to die, man. And thank God. Because when I first got clean, I didn't really want to be clean. It was just real cold outside. And the treatment center that I was in had coffee and cigarettes. So I was like, this is cool. I'll just stay here for a little bit. But everybody in that treatment center worked the program in Narcotics Anonymous, man, and were happy and had kids and new shoes and all the things. And were, you know, smiling and living life. So I was like, oh, my God, I want that. It was attractive, right? So I bought in, man. I drank the Kool-Aid. I started doing what they were doing, man. And I didn't know then. I was in phase two of that treatment center. I called my kid's mom, and I said, hey, I'd love to talk to the kids because we get our feelings back, and all of a sudden now I want to be dad. I haven't been dad in 5 years, but now, like, I love my kids, and, you know, I want to be dad. And she said, these kids don't know who you are, man, and blah, blah, blah. And they didn't. They really didn't. But I didn't know then, had I taken my life or had I killed myself with dope the way I wanted to, because I didn't have the courage to shoot myself like some people do, but I didn't know then what my life would look like almost 5 years later, man. And what my life looks like now is I have custody of all my kids. I have a wife. I've got a buddy, man. I've got a brand new kid. He's 3. He's like this big. And I'll tell you a story about him because I have to. But, like, I get to coach football. I've coached basketball. I've coached their baseball. My 16-year-old, I am now the example of what a man should be for him. I get to live a life, man, that I don't want to escape from today. You know, and that's the hope of this program, man. Because I was always wanting to escape my reality. If I had it my way, I'd be sitting in a trap house, in a trailer, in the middle of nowhere, Kentucky, with my head between my legs. I'd still be sitting there. That was all I wanted, because that was perfect. You know, one of the best days, I tell this story because it's ridiculous, and this dude actually got clean, man. He's clean now. We go to church together. But one time, man, I'm sitting on a couch, and my buddy's over there, and I'm over here, and we just kept sliding into the floor. So high, we just kept sliding in the floor, and we'd wake up and laugh at each other and get back up on the couch and then do it again. Best day of my life. How ridiculous is that, man? I'll never forget it. That was the happiest I'd ever been that day, just sliding into the floor. You know, that's what my life had become, man. But now I get to come to Houston, man, and drink cucumber water while I lay by the pool. And, you know, I drank a bunch of lemon water this morning in the gym, and I peed like 75 times. But I get to do things, man, and go places, and I get to raise my kids, man, and I have a family. And the family that I have is the most important thing in my life, man, because there's nothing I never cared about anything but myself until now. And now I get the opportunity, man, to come home. And I'll tell you a story, and I'll close with this. And I have to tell this story because God not only gave me the grace and the opportunity to stay alive and to help people and to be a part of this program, man, but he also he showed out for me in a way that I have to share. I feel obligated, or I get to, however you want to look at it. But Carly and I, my wife, we got all my kids back and got us a house and all the things. And we end up having this little boy. And see, I didn't know, you know, that I would ever get my kids back. I didn't know I'd ever have another kid. I didn't know that any of this stuff would ever come, man. You know, at first I just wanted some new shoes. You know, really, I just wanted some new shoes, some stuff. Everything I owned would fit in a garbage bag. Like, literally, when I got arrested and I ended up in treatment, I had a pair of sweatpants with a pair of shorts underneath them, a pair of socks, one sandal. I didn't have both. I only had one. A cut-off T-shirt and a hoodie and a tweaking beacon. That's all I owned in my name. I had a pocket full of rocks, really cool rocks. That was all I owned. That was it. That was all. At 35 years old, that was all my life had been reduced to. That was all I owned, all I had to my name. But we get a place, man, and we do all these things and get the kids back, and I'm coaching a little bit and all that stuff, and we have this little boy. He's perfect, man, and I get to go through the process without being high, right? Because one time I drove from Kentucky all the way to Bryan, College Station area, to watch my son be born, and I look like Johnny Depp from Blow when his daughter's born, you know, and he's like rocking, and then he falls over. And the lady tried to talk me out of not signing his birth certificate. I was that fucked up that she was like, "Are you sure you want to sign this?" I'm like, "Yeah." But I drove 12 hours straight without sleeping. I was geeked out. It was so bad. But I got to go through this process clean, man, and I got to hold her hand, and I got to do all these things, and that restoration process of, like, you know, changing diapers and being appreciative of it and doing all these things that I neglected or didn't care about with my first kids, and I realize now that I cheated my kids out of a lot. But anyway, I get to this baby. He gets to be 5 or 6 months old, and you know how their eyes, like, move a little bit, you know, when they're first born? Well, he has never stopped. And we take him to the doctor. They send us to Shriners Hospital. And we go to Shriners Hospital, and they do some tests and all the different things on him. And then, you know, a couple weeks later, I'm sitting at the house, and the lady calls, and she says, "Hey, are you sitting down?" And I'm like, "Yeah, sure." She's like, "Listen, I need to tell you that your son has what they call septo-optic dysplasia. He will always be blind. He will never see, and he will never be able to take care of himself." And that was our first real no matter what in this program, because everything had been good until then. But it floored us, man. And still to this day, the hardest thing I've been through in recovery. But I'd been in enough meetings, man, and I'd been around. I've seen mom died, dad died. All the things. I've seen people come into the meetings and share what they're going through and cry and slap the table and do whatever they have to, man, and tell the newcomer that you don't have to use drugs no matter what. So that's what we did, man, you know? And we got through it, and then I remember, like, praying to God, like, "Please let him see. I want him to be able to see his mom. I want him to know what she looks like, blah, blah, blah." And then I realized, like, maybe he is exactly the way he's supposed to be, and I'm praying for the wrong thing. Maybe what I need to be praying for is to be the father he needs me to be and to be able to show up in his life and be the man I'm supposed to be for him. And quit trying to put my hands into God's plan and just accept what it is, show up and show out. And a couple months later, we take him. I go to church about 45 minutes from my house. We're at church one morning and the pastor has us come up front. And we take him up front and the entire congregation, man, comes over top of him. Over top of us and prays for us. And we go home. And at that time, she worked for a treatment center and I worked from home. So every morning I got to spend with this little boy, man. And it's the greatest, you know, I still do it. Every morning, it's me and him. And every morning, like, I'd feed him before I put him to bed so I could work, you know. And every morning, like, you know, if I'm in the middle of bulking, we're eating oatmeal together and I'm feeding him, you know, and all that. And one morning, I'm feeding him, and I set a spoon down, and he reaches over and grabs it. So I grabbed a spoon, and real quietly, I gave him a bite. Real quietly, I set it down over here, and he reaches over and grabs it. Now, this boy is 3 years old. He can see. He's getting ready to start school. He can look at your shirt and be like, oh, L, you know, and spell things. He can spell. He walks around with a guitar all day long. I'm not kidding, man. This kid, he walks around with a guitar all day long. He's been through about five because he'll be in there playing guitar. We got a mirror on our bathroom door, and he'll sit there, and he does this and everything, and then you'll hear his mom or my mother-in-law, she'll say, Bentley, and he'll throw the guitar and take off running. So we've been through a few guitars and stuff, man, and but, like, God blessed us in a way, man, that I have seen a true biblical miracle, and I have to share that with you guys because thank you. You know what I mean? But also, I could have became a victim of the trauma that I've been through a long time ago. I could have took my life, or I could have kept using, or I could have done some things that a lot of people have done and just continued to be a victim of it, right? But instead, some people held my hand, man, walked me through this program, and taught me how to live a life that I no longer want to run from. And now I take the trauma that I've been through, man, and I use that as a tool to help other people, to sponsor, to guide, to connect, whatever it is. Because talking about the things and facing those things and hitting them head on through step work, sharing honestly, all those things, that's how we heal, man, and that's how we move on. Because I'm not defined by the trauma that I've been through, man. I'm defined by the choices that I make today and how I get to live my life. And because of the program in Narcotics Anonymous, I have a life much better than I've ever deserved or could ever have dreamed of. And that's all I got. Thanks for letting me share. All right. All
right. Thank you for allowing me to serve as your chairperson for this workshop. Please join in circling up and closing with the third step prayer.
Close her up. Grab some of that.
Many of us have said,
take my will of my life, guide me in my recovery, and show me how to live clean. Keep coming back. It works if you work it.
You die if you don't, so work because you're worth it.
Good job. Good job.
That's something cool about the kid.
Oh, my God.
Little Lorenzo?
Thank you. Thank you for sharing.
Yes.
Yeah, that's cool.